Talk Radio.
Welcome, everyone. You're listening to Liberty Talk Radio. I'm your host, Joe Cristiano. It looks like we had a little problem today. Didn't get started at the right time. Our guest today will be Andy Sutton. He'll be talking about the euro and the U.S., meaning us, and what the euro means to us, and what the euro conflict means to us. Stay tuned. We should have Andy calling in any second now. Oh, boy, we have another problem. Let me see if we can get Andy on the line. Hello, Andy. Hello. Who's on the phone? Oh, is that Jim? Is that you?
Yeah. Hi, Jim.
Hi, Jim. I'm sorry. It's my fault. I was actually late, and we're having a computer problem at the same time. So I don't know how to rectify it because there's no way to get out of this thing. Just hold on one second. Andy said he'd be calling in after. In fact, there he is right now. Hold on.
Okay, good.
Andy, is that you?
Hey, Joe. How's it going?
Well, Andy, just hold on. I think we got this. May have this computer situation resolved. Hopefully, don't go away. Let's see. You know, Andy, are you still there?
I'm here.
Okay. I'm awfully sorry. Actually, this is all my fault. I wish I could blame it on someone else. Is there anyone around that I can blame for this, okay?
sure. I don't know. I got a whole list of people you can blame.
Okay, please just email me, and then I'll make a complaint listing. Good evening.
I don't know if anybody will buy it, but hey.
Well, I'm sorry. If I told you what I did, you'd say, Joe, you're too dumb to be to be associated with. I'm leaving, so I'll spare you. I'll tell you some other time, okay? Well, ladies and gentlemen,
you have to do that.
Oh,
I'm gonna hold you to that now.
Okay, I will. And you know, and I'll be honest. Most likely, I will be crying. You know, when I say this, okay? actually, Jim has called in. We already have a call on the line. Jim, why don't you stay on? You want to stay on the line like that, Jim? Is that okay with you?
Yeah, I have to because I can't get your internet connection from the website.
Okay, all right. Well, you probably can now. We got that all squared away. Folks, this is Joe Cristiano. You are listening to Liberty Talk Radio. I apologize for the delay. It is all my fault, and I know that, and I will punish myself right after the broadcast. We have with us today Andy Sutton, economist and chief investment strategist with Sutton Associates, Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. Our subject this evening will be the euro and the U.S., meaning us, and what it means to us. Andy, good evening. Thank you for calling in and being so patient with me.
Oh, it's not a problem. It's always worth being here. And hey, Jim, hi to you as well, since we're all together again.
Andy, let me just start off with an open focus type question. You know, every day we have a announcement or pronouncement regarding the euro, what everyone is doing. People are antsy. They just, everyone, I guess, is just sitting around waiting for something to happen. And it's either going to be the euro or the U.S. or someone else. Can you help clarify the situation to put it in perspective so people like me can sleep at night?
Well, here's the thing. Everybody has, and this has been going on for almost 3 years now, the Eurozone had a crisis. These economies, these countries borrowed too much money, and it got to the point where everybody started to worry because, wow, debt-to-GDP ratios were over 100%, and that seemed to be the alarm bell in the minds of everybody that, wow, there's a problem here in Europe and the land of milk and honey when
right.
It comes to social programs and all of this kind of stuff. Well, anyway, to make a long story short, this thing's been solved now, and I say that with sarcasm, at least a dozen, 15 times. There's been bailouts. There's been the formation of the European Rescue Fund, the Euro Rescue Fund, the Stabilization Fund. I mean, we've got all sorts of alphabet soup acronyms that have been concocted, really, by central bankers around the world and our Fed as well to try to kick the can down the road. The bottom line is these countries are broke. And the kicker is, you know, Greece just had elections here a couple days ago, and everybody was on television and the radio saying, oh, if the wrong party wins and they don't embrace austerity, then the Greeks are going to have to leave the euro, and that's just going to be disaster, and there's going to be shockwaves and all this kind of stuff. And ironically, if you can believe this, the Greek people, they went to the polls and they voted to cut their standard of living. They voted for the party by a very slim margin that promised austerity. Now, you have to remember, most of these European countries have multiple political groups that run in these elections. So getting 27 or 28% of the vote is usually enough to do it. I believe that the majority party had about 29%. I could be wrong on that. I don't pay that much attention. This was the first time I really have, just because it was so interesting intellectually. So at any rate, this government, this coalition government that they're likely to form now, is in favor of the bailout. And that means that they're going to take IMF, European Central Bank, Reed, Federal Reserve money in exchange for more cuts in government spending, more cuts in social programs, and basically all sorts of just choke collars around their economy. And their economy is already in trouble. Nobody's lending. People aren't paying bills. Businesses are doing nothing. They aren't even filling orders because they know they're not going to get paid, and there's sales taxes to be paid and all this other stuff. And I put an article on my blog about that. And basically, the European economy, in terms of these countries that are in distress, has come grinding to a halt. And that makes it really likely that they're going to be able to pay off these IMF bailout loans. I mean, this is just ridiculous. So we keep the euro alive for another day, another week, another month, and then guess what? We're going to be back here. We're going to be doing it again.
Right.
We will be back here doing this again at least twice before the end of this year, because that's how fast things are progressing. And now it's not even Greece. It's Spain. It's Italy. It's all over the place. The whole thing is a mess, and it's destined to fail. And people here in America, you guys, guess what? You're next.
Well,
and that's basically the whole thing in a nutshell.
Well, Andy, will it take Federal Reserve U.S. dollars to help bail these people out, or will the euro do it themselves?
Well, what's been going on is what the Fed will do is they will do what's called a swap with the European Central Bank, and they've done several already. And basically what a swap is it's exactly what it sounds like. The Federal Reserve will give the European Central Bank dollars. The European Central Bank will give the Federal Reserve euros. And so that basically imports dollars overseas where they can be spent into economies and cause inflation abroad.
Right.
Unfortunately, since we bring a lot of our goods in from other countries, when we export inflation, it comes back to us. That's the nasty secret.
Right.
They don't tell you that when Ben Bernanke gets up on Capitol Hill and does his little spiel every few months. They don't tell you that in the Bloomberg News articles that basically lately I'm really disgusted with Bloomberg. These articles have become little more than outright propaganda pieces. Lies, fabrications, modifications, stretching of the truth, that sort of thing.
Right.
So they don't tell you that. So yeah, guess what? The American consumer, the American taxpayer, however you want to look at it, you're going to pay for the Eurozone bailout. Ultimately, guess what? Your own country is going to need to be bailed out. Our debt to GDP ratio is somewhere in the same ballpark of where Greece's was, where Italy's was, where Spain's was, where Portugal's was. You get the idea, when they started having problems. Everybody seems to think that the United States is immune from all of this economic reckoning, if you will.
Well, the dollar's good as gold, Andy. Don't you know that? The dollar's good as gold.
We've been the reserve currency, but here's the kicker. The big conception, or the big misconception, is that the U.S. government prints this currency. We, the U.S. government, the states of this nation, our country, the people of this country, have about as much sovereignty when it comes to their money as the Europeans do. We're all held hostage by the Federal Reserve, just like they're held hostage by the European Central Bank, the IMF, and the World Bank. that's the dirty little secret nobody wants to really talk about too much here. And that was one of the biggest things I addressed in my last quarterly newsletter.
Right.
Because it's so important. People need to understand what is going on here. If you don't get that, you're not going to understand why this is going to happen here next.
Well, why swap with the euro for dollars? How does that buy anybody anything?
Well, what it does is it keeps interest rates low for dollars, and that's what they're trying to do. Bernanke has said that multiple times in congressional testimony, that his overall goal, he doesn't care about his two mandates. The Federal Reserve Act mandated that they strive for maximum employment and price stability.
Right.
He cares about neither. He cares about low interest rates for dollars so that we can try to stimulate the economy. He's a pure Keynesian.
Right.
He believes that if you print enough money and drive interest rates low enough, and that's why they're doing another $267 billion worth of this twist nonsense, if you drive interest rates low enough, you're going to stimulate the economy. The whole premise here is that debt equals economic expansion. It's totally false. It's totally morally bankrupt, ethically bankrupt. It's criminal because these guys all know better. And what it is it's indentured servitude, essentially, to
right.
these central banks. And that's no sugarcoating. No sweeteners added, my friend. That's the way it is.
Well, if just swapping dollars for euros and euros for dollars, if the only result, the only purpose of that is to keep interest rates low, that does not even help solve the problem or really inject any more money in the system, does it?
Well, it puts money into the system because the dollars came from nothing.
Right, the dollars came from nothing. But where did the euros come from? I thought there was a certain amount
that
we printed.
They also come from nothing.
Oh, they get the. You mean no country, but the European Central Bank will print it and swap it. Okay,
yeah.
I got you now. So it's not that Greece or Italy themselves are printing more euro.
No.
It's the European Central Bank.
No. They don't get to do
okay.
that.
Okay, all right.
They use the euro, and think of the European Union and their nation states the same way, for this example, that you would look at the United States and our 50 nation states that we have.
Right.
It's the same kind of parallel. You know, we have 50 states in this country, and we all use the Federal Reserve's money, and we pay them for the privilege to do so.
Right.
Now, in Europe, you have 19, I think it is, nation states that use the European Central Bank's money, and they pay them for the privilege to do so. So it's basically a pretty nice parallel.
Yeah, I say, okay.
That's why the 10th Amendment movement, by the way, and this is totally on a rabbit trail, and you can kick me in the face later for this. That's why the 10th Amendment movement is so important, the state sovereignty. And these laws, you know, every once in a while you hear about a state that's passing a law about changing the legal tender from Federal Reserve notes to gold coins or silver dollars, which is actually the constitutional dollar. You know, that's why these things are so important, because the Europeans, they don't have as much of an ability to opt out like we do.
Right.
We have actual tender that we can fall back on that the government still provides. The government still coins, you know, these silver eagles, and they coin gold eagles and fractionals and all this kind of thing.
Right.
You know, the Europeans, they're pretty much, I mean, they're in a little bit worse shape than we are, but we're not too far behind. You know, we've both ceded a great deal of our sovereignty to these central banks, and these central banks couldn't give a rip about these economies. Their job is to kick this thing down the road long enough so that they have basically every country, every province, county, state, township, whatever you want to call it, person making monthly payments. That's the entire goal of this entire exercise, is to get people making payments. That's indentured servitude.
Right.
That's the goal. Right. That's what they want. You read their white papers. That's what they talk about. You know, you talk about some of these groups that are meeting, and they get more publicity now. And you read about the publicity, the white papers, come out of RAND Corporation and some of these other places. That's what they want. They want a bunch of people that are making monthly payments. And they're doing a nice job.
Right. Well, China is really facing the same problems with their economy. Japan apparently is GDP to debt ratio the worst in the world. It's like
250%. Oh, yeah, they're terrible. Yeah.
Now, why doesn't anyone ever talk about Japan and how unstable they are? Is that just because they're a big exporting nation and they produce a lot?
Well, it's that, and Japan also has a huge appetite for U.S. treasuries. Behind China and the Fed,
right.
The Fed is now the number one holder. That was released, I guess, about a week and a half ago. The Fed is the number one holder, the biggest holder of U.S. treasuries now.
Right, right.
China is second. Japan is third. So Japan, basically what they do is they go into debt to buy our treasuries.
Right.
If that makes any sense. So basically you can see where the people of these countries, nobody cares about the interests of these people. You know, and if you're sitting at home tonight and you're thinking, boy, I'm getting fired up for this election. I'm going to vote for somebody because they care about me. You know what? Get off the acid.
Right.
I mean, seriously, it's time to stop splitting hairs.
Right.
I mean, this is just ridiculous. These guys do not care about anything other than whatever their own little personal agendas are. They don't care about you.
Right.
If you get a few bucks at the end of the day after they get paid, hey, that's fine, whatever. They can thump their chest and say what a great job they've done. But otherwise, you know what? They don't care.
Right.
And it's very obvious. You look at 2008, the Fed could have stepped in. They could have pumped up the markets. They could have saved all those people from losing their 401ks and their IRAs and all that stuff. Did they do anything? No. They did nothing. Now, the market gets anywhere below about 12,200, and the Fed steps in. You know, they want to talk it up, and, you know, they're defending positions. Whose
right.
positions they're defending, who knows?
Right.
They're certainly not defending yours. You got to defend your own position.
Right. Absolutely. Well, you know, I can just hear the retorts now. We don't have any call. Folks, I'm sorry. I should have mentioned that this is Andy Sutton, economist and chief investment strategist with Sutton Associates, Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. He's talking about the euro, how it affects us. We do have a call-in number. It's 888-773-4496. We did start late tonight, and it's all my fault. I should be punished, and I will be punished because I am my own worst punisher, you know, if you will, disciplinarian. I probably will not sleep for 3 weeks. 888-773-4496, 888-773-4496. We'd like to hear from you, your comments, especially your questions, if we need to clarify anything. This is Liberty Talk Radio. I'm your host, Joe Cristiano. The response that I can hear in the background right now is, hey, you know, we've been before. Why don't you get that conspiracy guy off the damn radio and put somebody who knows what the heck's going on, okay? I said it for everybody out there, okay, for probably 90% of the population. I just spoke for them, Andy. How do you respond to that?
Look at the last 100 years. And here's an exercise people can do if they don't believe me. All you have to do, go to the Minneapolis Fed. Go to their website. It's MinneapolisFed, one word, .org. Go there. On the main page, there's what's called an inflation calculator. And what it gives you the opportunity to do is it gives you the opportunity to put in that you purchased some value, some denomination of goods in a certain year. Well, how much would you need to buy that same quantity of goods today?
Right.
And if you put in $1 worth of goods back in 1913 when they chartered this abomination and figure out what it would cost you today to buy the same quantity of goods, it'll take you, and I checked this the other day here, it was $23.50, $23.53 I believe it was. If you take the reciprocal of that, you will find that the Fed has destroyed, in its nearly 100-year charter, which comes up for renewal next year, by the way, nearly 96% of your purchasing power.
Right.
Now, I understand the average person says, well, I haven't lived for 100 years. Wait a second. One of their two main mandates was price stability. Do you think that destroying 96% of the average American's purchasing power over the last 99 years constitutes good stewardship and price stability? This is on their website. This is not something I'm doing. This is not something anybody else is doing. This comes from the horse's mouth. So if anybody wants to, you know, start the tinfoil hat nonsense and start calling Joe and Andy a bunch of conspiracy nut jobs, that say that there's this shadow bank trying to rob you, go see what the shadow bank has to say for itself. It'll admit it right there, black and white.
I was at a business meeting recently, and these guys are kind of sharp. One guy was a sort of a investment counselor, a venture capitalist type guy, and you know, all different types of people. You know, just big people in business for themselves. And the topic was on inflation, and this one guy who, you know, should know more than I do. Helps businesses and finances businesses. And he says, but, you know, all this inflation is really, talk is really not much to be concerned about. He said, yeah, he said, we have inflation, everything goes up in price, thus everything remains the same.
Nice try.
Yeah, I mean, that's what he said, you know? And so he said, well, he said, so, you know, bread cost 25 cents, but you were only making $50 a week. Now bread is, you know, whatever it is, $2.50, and you're making $500 a week. He says, it doesn't make any difference. It's all the same. He says, it's a break even. So we can inflate all we want. He says, everything just adjusts to it. Big deal. Well, how do you answer that?
I've got a rebuttal for that.
Okay, please.
back in the 1950s and 60s, you could have one breadwinner, no pun intended, and most people were able to get by on that with the single breadwinner and maybe a mortgage on a home. Maybe a few had some kind of other credit. There wasn't consumer credit back in those days.
That's correct.
You know, you got it for a house, maybe a car. That was it. You didn't have credit cards, you didn't have store cards or any of that stuff. Today, you need two breadwinners, by and large, for the majority, and you need credit cards. Just look at the ballooning of consumer debt, the ballooning of mortgage debt. That inflation is a break-even exercise. It's utter hogwash. It hasn't proved out. It's been studied many, many times by many, many reputable economists, and they've all come to the same conclusion, unless you work for the government or the Federal Reserve itself, that inflation damages spenders, it damages consumers,
right.
And it always has.
Yeah, when you come to think of it, back in those days, when you bought a house, you put down 20%, 30% on the house, and so you were never underwater on your house. It'd be near impossible. If you bought a car, the max you could finance it was 2 years, and we have someone on, Jim, you're on the phone, and we'll get you in a second. Usually people either paid cash for the car or put down a substantial down payment, and they had small notes, but you still had one breadwinner in the family, only one,
yeah.
And you had a house that was nearly partially paid for, a car that was almost always paid for. You were putting some money away. And remember the old Christmas club? I remember I used to put money away for Christmas Club, and I used to have like $120 at the end of the year, thought I died and gone to heaven, did all my Christmas shopping, and on January 1st, I didn't owe anyone a dime. And this is what people did. Well, today, all we're doing is racking up more and more debt, but that means we have to work more and more jobs. It's a slow, insidious process that eats away at the wealth and the purchasing power of the individual. So I guess we can't fool that system, can we?
Well, here's the thing. You know, and this is where all of this came into origination, or came to be, if you will. You know, now keep in mind, I went to graduate school at an American university where they taught Keynesian economics.
Right.
And they felt that I understood it well enough that they submitted me for international honors in Keynesian economics, which, by the way, is the biggest international fraud that's ever been perpetrated on the financial world. But that's, all aside.
Right.
This system was broken back in the 1930s. This fiat money, government excess system, if you will, globally, was quickly coming to an end. Obviously, the United States had some savings, but we were spending it to try to get ourselves out of the Great Depression, yada, yada, yada. Well, anyway, Britain hired a guy by the name of John Maynard Keynes, and he came up with this ridiculous justification for deficit spending, and made the case that, and then the book that he wrote, or the work that he wrote and published, was called Wealth and Prosperity, and it was anything but. It was kind of like the Patriot Act. It was a misnomer. So he writes this treatise, if you will, and it basically says that when there's a recession, government should spend money incessantly, borrowing it if necessary to stimulate the economy. And so we embraced this, and people started questioning Keynes, and they said, well, what about the long run? You know, this might work in the short run. And he said, well, who cares about the long run? We're all dead.
Right.
But this way of thinking
right.
has been allowed to persist now ever since the mid-1930s. And that's exactly what we're firmly ensconced in today, is Keynesianism, and that's government debt, government spending, stimulate the economy. And we are getting an object lesson right here in our own country of the complete, total intellectual debauchery that was and is Keynesianism, and how it's a fraud, and how these guys can get on TV and stand up. And you know, by the way, I've heard people at Chamber of Commerce meetings talk about the exact same thing, and they will stand there and they will call you crazy for saying that debt is bad. And that, well, wait a second, you can't count debt in GDP. It has to be paid back. It's a reversible transaction.
Right.
It doesn't matter. We need to borrow and spend money. And they're almost like robots.
That's right.
And when you ask them why, they repeat the same thing over again. We need to be, you know, Larry Summers here, he was just, I forget what website it was, I'm thinking, it'll come to me eventually. He was just on, people can go Google it. It was like 2-3 weeks ago. He was basically calling out the government for not borrowing more money. This is Keynesianism. It is a failure. It has failed in Europe. It is failing here. We're getting an eyewitness. I mean, this is historical, Joe.
Right.
I mean, this is a paradigm that has gone on for the last 7 decades, and it's coming to an end. And we're getting to actually be a part of this.
Well,
intellectually, it's really neat, but when you kick this down and the rubber meets the road and you start talking about reality, this is really scary.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I mean, this is almost delusional. It's like a mental illness, these people.
Right. Andy, let's stop for station identification. When we come back, we'll take that call from Jim. Jim, just hold on for a second, okay? We'll get right to you.
You're listening to Liberty Talk Radio. Political talk derived from a historical perspective. Not always palatable, but good food for thought. Pure libertarian talk with host Joe Cristiano. LibertyTalkRadio.com.
Good evening, everyone. This is Joe Cristiano. You're listening to Liberty Talk Radio. With us this evening, we have Andy Sutton from Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, an economist and chief investment strategist with Sutton & Associates, discussing the euro and how this is going to affect the U.S. That means us. I also want to mention that Liberty Talk Radio now is broadcasting on 1170 KFAQ, Saturday evenings, right after the Glenn Beck Show, and as well on 1100 KFNX AM in Phoenix. So we're expanding. We do hope you do listen in, tune in, and also call in. And if you call in, you'll get those call-in numbers and whatever when you do call in. I think you'll really enjoy it. This Saturday night, I'm going to have a co-host just for fun. We're going to banter back and forth. And in the weeks to come, I'm going to have Andy return if he would do us the honor and do a program with us on KFAQ and KFNX as well. Andy, I hope you would agree to that.
No, absolutely.
Okay,
I always enjoy this. This is the one time where I get to speak to somebody who actually understands what's going on. And you know what? And I really need to qualify that, because since you and I started talking, I mean, when did we start talking? 2007?
Oh, geez. It's, actually,
it's been
about
a while.
You know, about 6 years ago, right?
Yeah, it's been
right?
a while. When we first started talking, you couldn't find two people to rub together in a shopping mall that understood this.
Right.
And in the last 6 years, there's been a huge awakening. You know, there's still a lot of people that don't get it, and there's still, you know, and I gotta be honest with you. You know, I talk to people, and they say, look, you know, I'd really like to study up and get on this, but I'm working 2 or 3 jobs. I'm trying to keep a roof over my head. I'm trying to keep my wife and kids fed.
Right.
You know, I just don't have time for this.
Right. That's right.
You know, and I totally empathize with people like that. The ones I get mad at are the ones who are willfully ignorant,
right.
And they'll sit there and they won't even take a look. They won't go to the Minneapolis Fed's website. they'll call me a crackpot, but they won't take 5 seconds to go to that website and see that what I just said was true.
Right.
And think about it. Those are the ones that I get upset with.
Right. Well, you know, being on KFAQ, you know, it's a conservative station, and but it's sort of a neocon station also. It does have Jerry Doyle, who's more of a libertarian. And Mark Levine is sort of in between somewhere. And, of course, then there's Laura Ingraham and those people who are hardcore, you know, Republicans and nothing else matters. And of course, I get the carryover from the Glenn Beck show, and those people are expecting to be, you know, be in the neocon arena with me, and I'm not there. And that's, I get some interesting mail. Let's get Jim on the wire. He's been holding now for several minutes. Jim, is that you?
Yes, it is.
Okay, yeah. Jim, you pressed the magic one button. Do you have a question or a comment?
Yes, I do. First of all, Andy, great to hear you. Glad you're on the show tonight. You doing okay?
I'm doing great.
Well, I want to tell you that, as you know, I'm a big fan of Joe and his broadcasts, and have listened to you on your monthly broadcast with him. Gosh, I can't believe it's been that many years. But you know, anyways, many, many, many times I've heard you guys banter. And tonight is a classic. You are on a roll. You are coming on strong. I love it. I don't know what you ate or drank before the show, but you are on a roll.
I think Joe hit my tripwire with the personal responsibility that he's going to take for causing a 25-minute delay. A lot of people would seek to blame somebody else. I don't know. Maybe that lit a fuse for me.
You know,
seriously, I'm going to listen to this broadcast again because some of your sound bites and lines are just classic, and obviously you're doing it with so much passion and conviction, and it's always fun to hear you, Tim. Like you said, it's always refreshing to speak to like-minded people, because when you introduce some of these topics to Joe Sixpack or your neighbor, you always have to be kind of cautious and spoon feed them, and then you still can get catch flack, and so it's tough to awaken people, and it's always fun to speak to intelligent people that are on board with what's going on. But hey, listen, I know Joe only has a couple more minutes on the show.
Oh no, excuse me, Jim. No, we're on for an hour. I calibrated the thing. We still have actually 33 minutes to go. So we're fine.
Okay, good.
Yeah, I started late. I won't tell you what I did because it was so dumb. You never speak to me again. But this is the first time in 6 years that I actually had done this. So I mean, I guess you make
that power button's a dangerous thing.
Oh yeah. Boy,
Joe, it might be the first mistake you've made in the last 6 years in anything, right?
I think it's 1954 is the last time I made a mistake, Jim.
Well, listen, good. I'm glad you're not having to disconnect in 3 minutes.
No.
So I can slow down a little bit.
Yeah. No. So if you have, do you have any questions of Andy at this time?
Yes, I do. Andy, a couple things. I have two questions. One, any thoughts or response to the Fed's actions today? They threw out another $260-some billion in, I don't know, mortgage, bonds or something. It's shy of the $1 to $2 trillion that some people think a big QE3 might unleash. But what do you make of today? And as much as I try to understand all these fraudulent bailouts and TARPs and things, and obviously the Wall Street banksters benefited in previous rounds, who are the beneficiaries of today's action? So could you just briefly explain for the layman what happened today and who the beneficiaries and implications are?
Well, that's a good question. Basically, what they did today is they committed what they're calling a inflation-neutral action, where they're going to sell $267 billion in shorter-term treasuries and use that money to buy longer-term treasuries. The idea here is that if they can get the longer end of the yield curve even lower, that what will happen is that will spur investment. The whole idea, and basically the bottom line here, the beneficiaries of this are going to be banks, because it's going to lower their borrowing costs.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to make more, look at the consumer debt car loans are considerably higher. Mortgages, obviously, they're not making quite as much money on. But you look at car loans, student loans, that's an Uncle Sam business now. Credit cards, the spread's going to get wider, even wider, I should say. So you're going to have beneficiaries there. But basically, the whole idea here, the bottom line here, is that we need to find ways to induce people, businesses, whoever, to borrow more money. So
right.
We drive the yield curve, we flatten it out, and we make it even lower. We set it lower. You know, the 30-year bond, the yield on that is at all-time lows. And apparently that's not low enough. They feel that that's not going to stimulate the economy where it is now, so they're going to try and make it even lower. So expect the 30-year bond to go up. And anybody who's placed bets, and obviously you've got that opens your whole Pandora's box of insider trading, and
yeah.
Who knew about this beforehand, yada, yada, yada. You know, we've been there before, you know, on the beneficiary side. But the idea, again, is just to do nothing more than induce people to borrow money. There was an article here on Bloomberg, and I'm really sour with them right now. The Toll Brothers down here in Pennsylvania, sorry to say, I share a state of residence with these guys. They talked about, one of their executives talked about, I should say, there's, quote-unquote, 4 years of pent-up demand. People are just dying to go out and buy luxury homes, and lower mortgage rates are going to stimulate all that buying. So what they're hoping, obviously, is that the Fed can get these rates down even lower than they are now, and this is going to somehow induce people to go into debt, to buy more McMansions, and we can reinflate this housing bubble. That's all this is ever about. It's about taking something that's dead and trying to turn it into Lazarus.
Right.
That's what they're trying to do here. We've got a blown housing bubble. No, it's not blown. It just deflated a little bit. You know, we'll get the air pump out and we'll fill it back up and watch it float into the stratosphere. You know, that's what they're hoping to do here. And $267 billion, by the way, is not going to do anything.
Yeah.
You know, that's going to be over the next 6 months. And here's the thing. You know, the Fed could have come out and said, you know, we're going to buy another $2 trillion worth. All that does is hasten the end of the game.
Right, just kick the can down the road. Right.
Exactly. But what that does, the bigger they go, the more it accelerates us toward the end of the game. They know that this goose is cooked.
Well, you know, it's ironic that you would say that because that segues to my next question is, how do you see this playing out? And I know that's a real tough question. You don't have a crystal ball. Joe and I have joked about this, that whatever's going to happen when hits the fan, it's going to happen in a way that we, you know, had never thought of or least expected. But all that said, as you know, in 08, when we had the market crash and the sky was falling, the dollar was a flight to safety and stayed strong. So what will is it going to take what are going to be the triggers or events that will cause our dollar, as debased as it's been over the last 100 years, to become to lose another 90% and become toilet paper, or hit the wall where we are experiencing higher hyperinflation? And
basically what you've got here. Situation. You look at the dollar index, and you know the media relies on that, and they say, "Oh, the dollar is so strong. We have such a strong economy," and that's only because the euro is doing so poorly because of all of its problems. It has nothing to do with the dollar's inherent strength. The dollar has no inherent strength. It's backed by nothing. If you want to say it's backed by the U.S. economy, be my guest. But when you look at the debt loads across all levels of the U.S. economy, the dollar should be worth about half of what it's worth. Now, that's the problem. It's a moving target. And here's the thing. The Fed, by doing these swaps with the ECB, cranks more dollars into the system. Yeah, it drives interest rates lower, but it also weakens the dollar. You're going to see this thing start to poke out. I wouldn't go investing in foreign exchange markets if I were the average person right now. I'd be going to my precious metals dealer, and I'd be backing my pickup to the back door, and I'd be buying with both hands at these prices.
Yeah, I agree. The silver under 30 and gold in the $1,600 range.
Got that right.
Yeah, within months or a couple of years, we're gonna be looking back at these.
Now,
yeah.
Here's the kicker, Jim. I wrote a piece, and I'm not patting myself on the back. This is just the reality. It was back, I guess, sometime early in 2009. I forget what it was. Maybe it was August, somewhere in there. Gold had just been hammered, you know, throughout the financial crisis.
Right.
And because everybody had made so much money on it, they got liquid. They needed to get out of it. They needed to shore up balance sheets, and that could certainly happen again. But it dipped under 800 for a while. I wrote a piece. I called it The Opportunity of a Lifetime. And people called me all sorts of names. They said I was, things you don't even hear if you have cable.
Right. this was like in 09 or 10, right?
09, somewhere in there. I mean, it's on the site. I forget exactly when, but it was somewhere in 09. Well, anyway, today we sit just a couple years later, gold has doubled in its dollar price. And that's at a low level.
I happened to, during that period, probably on the persuasion of Joe, bought a couple 1 ounce gold coins, and I wrote down the date and the amount, and they were like $793.
Well, there you go. Good for you. That was the opportunity of a lifetime. Yeah. Well, for people who haven't gotten in, guess what?
Well, it's the opportunity of your lifetime. Well, it was good that I nabbed a couple ounces, but at least I'm trying to accumulate. I didn't back up the truck, is what I should have done.
Well, Jim, that just proves you owe me.
Exactly. Well, Andy, did you not to change subjects, but did you one time mention or recommend a company called Terra Nitrogen?
I think that was something we talked about in the newsletter, yeah.
Well, it was indirectly from Joe through you, and I made a killing on it.
Oh, good.
So whoever I have to thank, I thank you, but check's not going to be in the mail.
I'm not getting any credit for that one.
I'll give you credit. I'm thanking you on the air. But I don't remember that we made any contractual agreement before.
No, I'm sure we didn't.
Yeah.
Good. I'm glad you were able to, you know, capitalize on that. But the whole thing about the tangibles is, you know, and this is something I think the Chinese have understood for a while now, because they've been inking deals all over the globe and contracting for the things that they can't produce themselves, is that the more funny money you have chasing these things, the higher the prices are going to go. Now, here's the kicker. You have a concerted effort, especially in the precious metals and energy markets, to keep prices down, because that hides inflation.
Yeah.
So you have inflation being created, and then they take some of those dollars that are being created and they use them in such a manner that it suppresses market equilibrium prices for things like gold, silver, oil, and so forth. Well, they can stand on that spring and they can add more weight to that spring and they can do whatever they want. But the fact of the matter is, and the bottom line is, gold's been money forever.
Right.
Silver's been money almost forever, and this world needs lots of energy if it wants to do any kind of economic activity whatsoever. So they can push on that spring all they want, but sooner or later, they're going to lose control of that spring, and when they do, look out. So gold under 16, silver under 30, yeah, it could go lower. We could have another liquidation event like 2008, and we probably will. Just because of the fact that the leverage being used today is even greater in many instances than it was in 2008 before.
But they'll never go to zero, right?
No, they'll never go to zero. Unlike your mortgage bonds. Oh wait, we get to mark those to model, not to market. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, like your mortgage bonds and all of this kind of thing. So, you know, and I know Joe had mentioned in an email, you know, leading up to this, that he kind of wanted me to give some, you know, non-specific but specific things that people could do. Get tangible stuff. Be flexible. Be smart. Don't put all your eggs in one basket. And for goodness sakes, keep some cash handy, because when this thing runs its course and a lot of this stuff is going to get driven down, you're going to have like another situation like you had in 1936, 1937, where you can go in and you can get stocks of really decent companies like Terra Nitrogen and many others at bargain basement prices, because we're still going to need goods. We're still going to need services. You know, I don't see us getting into like this Mad Max thing unless the politicians totally blow it, which, looking at Europe, who knows? I guess that probably has to be considered. But by and large, you have to be flexible. And don't believe all this Keynesianism that you hear on TV, because you're seeing the epic failure of it in Europe right now. And they're scrambling because the whole world's based on Keynesianism. Yeah. There's not
and
one... Go ahead. I'm sorry. I'm running off at the mouth here.
Oh, joke no. I love it. I'm soaking it all in. And, you know, I'm sure you and I go to similar websites and follow similar financial gurus. How do you feel about diversifying into other currencies, realizing I realize that all currencies are fiat, particularly, for example, the Australian dollar, let's say. You can trade it on the ticker FXA, I think, is it?
I believe, yeah.
And it's paying a 4% yield, and that I'm not exactly sure how holding currency pays that kind of yield. But, again, because I don't want to be more than 25% in precious metals in mining, and I'm teetering there. So I'm trying to look at my asset allocation and diversifying for risk of the debasement of the dollar. What's your thoughts on foreign currencies or any different methods or ways that you could acquire or hold those?
Well, basically, I mean, there's a bunch of different ways you can do it. The ETFs, you mentioned one of them, FXA, is one way to do it. And basically, the way you earn yields in foreign currencies is, if you had, say you had money, and you took it to an Australian bank and you bought a CD or you got a savings account or whatever. Whatever their base interest rate is over there, like our Fed funds rate, if their Fed funds rate is 4.5%, I'm just pulling a number out of the air. Chances are you're going to be able to get a savings account or a one-year CD that's somewhere in that ballpark. And obviously that's quite a bit better than, I was looking at money market funds the other day for a client, and the average was about 0.06%, which is nothing. So obviously going into another country, like Australia or New Zealand or any of these other places where you have a gradient, if you will, on the yield curve, you have a chance to make some decent short-term interest. The downside of that is the foreign exchange value. So let's say, for example, that the dollar would become stronger against the Australian dollar over the one-year period that you had your Australian dollar CD. You get your 4.5 or whatever percent it is from your Australian CD, but you're going to lose it on the re-exchanging it back into dollars.
Right.
So you're kind of playing two markets there.
Right, but the bet is that it's a hedge or protection, that you're betting on the U.S. dollar debasement.
Right, exactly.
And obviously, if it works out where it gets stronger versus the Aussie dollar, then you could. Yeah. But even still, the volatility between currencies isn't anything compared to what a company stock can do.
Oh, absolutely. And it really depends on what pair you happen to be talking about.
Right, exactly.
Some pairs are more volatile than others. Obviously, the euro pairs right now, are a bit more volatile just because of everything that's going on there, whereas some of them aren't nearly so volatile. I mean, basically, the bottom line there is if you're going to do that, it's not something that you just do it and walk away from. And you know this, but I'm saying this for the benefit of, other people that might be listening. If you're going to embark on that kind of a strategy, you need to be committed to keeping a very close eye on what's going on and monitoring and setting psychological limits for yourself. Well, if it gets to this point, I'm going to get out. I'm going to, take my gain, whatever. You have to kind of set up little rules for yourself.
Absolutely.
And you have to be very vigilant. And even if you're just going into precious metals or any of this kind of stuff, you have to be very vigilant and keep your eyes open and pay attention to what's going on. And it's hard because, people will say, well, I don't have the time. And that's why I think the 2 cent series, for example, is so valuable, because somebody can spend 7 to 10 minutes an issue and have a pretty good idea of what's going on, as in regards to that particular issue.
And, I agree.
That's where I think there's value there. But I mean, basically the bottom line here is you want to be tangible, and if you're already tangible, you want to try and hunt down yield, and there's places where you can find yield, and I talk about a lot of those in The Sensible Investor. You've seen the more recent issues of that. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of yield opportunities in there. You know, and again, you know, you have to be flexible because things change very quickly. You know, we can be out of a crisis today and back in one tomorrow. You know, this euro thing is a great example of that. The rally in Europe from the Greece's election lasted a couple of hours, and then they were worried about Spain again. So, I mean, it's just this is very instructive, or it should be, to everybody in terms of how you have to be on top of things today. And that's the bottom line. You got to be on top of it. You can't just say, well, I'm going to park it all here and go away and come back in 2 years and see. No, you can't do that. Nobody can.
We live in very interesting times. Andy, always a pleasure. Enjoy talking to you this evening. I'm going to hang up and listen to the remainder of the show on the Internet, and we'll catch up with you again next month. Take care.
All right, good talking to you, my
Jim,
friend.
Jim, thank you so much for calling. Take care. Just let me break really quickly for station identification, and then I'd like to ask you about gold, black gold.
You're listening to Liberty Talk Radio. Political talk derived from a historical perspective. Not always palatable, but good food for thought. Pure libertarian talk with host Joe Cristiano. LibertyTalkRadio.com.
Folks, this is Joe Cristiano. You're listening to Liberty Talk Radio. With us, we have Andy Sutton, economist and chief investment strategist with Sutton & Associates. I'm sorry, I got a little tongue-tied there. Sutton & Associates, discussing the economic affairs of the world, primarily the euro and how it affects us. Please call in with your questions or comments, 888-773-4496. Another thing I forgot to tell everybody, we have a email address we'd love for you to use, comments@libertytalkradio.com. That's our telephone number is toll-free, 888-773-4496. We still have a little time to take a couple of callers, 888-773-4496. Our email address is comments@libertytalkradio.com. If you're listening to this program on a rebroadcast, Liberty Talk Radio will be broadcasting on 1170 KFAQ here in Tulsa, which will broadcast almost nationwide now. It's 1170 KFAQ. And also, this Saturday, we'll start at 1100 KFNX in Phoenix as well. So I hope you listen in, and you'll get the details if you listen in with the call-in number. I do hear from you. Andy... black gold has been losing ground. I think today it went to $81 a barrel, which is almost unheard of in these times, with it being, you know, in the 100 and teens area. One thing I hear from people who know oil very well say that oil is going to have a very, very difficult time reaching any high levels of any high prices because... everyone's been kind of surprised that we've discovered pockets of oil that here before we did not know existed. And these pockets of oil are so vast that they're changing the whole paradigm of peak oil, not only here in the United States, but offshore. And some of the oil apparently is not that expensive to extract, I think. I'm not sure. How do you see that?
Well, here's the thing. People don't understand, and a lot of economists assume that when demand goes up, supply automatically comes up to meet it. Now, I used to have two really good contacts in the oil industry, and both of them, unfortunately, are now deceased. But as I understood it in 2010, the North Sea had begun exploration of a fairly significant oil find back in 1997, and as of 2010, they had yet to get one barrel out of that deposit.
I see.
So it takes a lot of time to do this. In the meantime, you have Mexico's main field, Cantarell, declining at a significant rate. Here's the thing that I think is affecting oil prices. I think basically you have a global economy that is really starting to approach stall speed right now in the aggregate. Obviously, you have China that's still pushing along. They're doing, you know, they're low single digit, mid single digit, you know, GDPs, depending on how you want to measure it. You know, they're not near recession yet, but Europe is in recession. We've never gotten out of ours. I totally denounce and reject out of hand our GDP measurement because it's a lie. It's dishonest, and we've discussed why in the past. So you have one of the biggest consuming nations in the world has been in recession now for 6 years, that being us. Europe is back in recession. They probably never left theirs either, because
right.
a lot of their, you know, economic output metrics are calculated similar to the way ours are. So you have these huge blocks of the globe that are struggling, you know, at the very least. And obviously, you look at oil demand here in America; it's nowhere near its peak. I mean, we're about 2.5 million barrels a day on average short of where peak demand was back in 2006 and
right.
early 2007. That's a lot of oil.
Right.
So obviously, you know, the Saudi Arabias, you know, the OPECs, the Russias, the Irans, all those people, they don't need to pump quite as hard to meet the demand that's there now. Obviously, you know, we're a big consumption block. Obviously, Europe is a big consumption block, and there's problems in both places. So that's going to have a downward effect, if you will, on prices. Here's where we have a potential problem, and this is where the Keynesianism has really distorted things. You know, if they're able to create enough artificial growth, you know, with this, these low prices scare people away. You know, I live in western Pennsylvania, Marcellus country. I can't tell you how many gas drillers, prospectors, you know, subcontractors, whatever, have packed up and left because of natural gas prices being absolutely in the toilet.
Oh, yeah, I'm a big investor in natural gas, and I would be embarrassed to tell you how much I lost. You know, I should be jumping out of the basement window, you know, at this point. It's horrible.
Well, I wouldn't go and do that yet. Here's the thing. Now, there's a lot of people that have said, and I hate getting into politics, but I think, you know, geopolitics is fair game here. If we had all these major discoveries of oil, and I don't doubt that there's been some big discoveries. You know, they talked about the Bakken, and it was worth about 4.5 billion barrels, and they made a huge deal about it. This was going back to, like, 2008. They made a huge deal about it. Well, at the time, that was 220 days worth of U.S. consumption.
Right.
Not global, U.S.
Right.
That's nothing. All right? So that whole thing. And then all of a sudden, the Bakken, you know, that reserve there, all of a sudden it's 100 times bigger than it was in 2008.
Yeah.
And they're telling us, oh, there's oil in the Rockies in Colorado that is so shallow that you could be drilling for a water well and hit it. You know, it's like jet clamp it. You know, and I'm sitting here and I'm thinking to myself, you got to be kidding me. This was here all this time, and we have had decent technology now for how long? And we found some pretty tough oil fields, you know, tough to find oil fields with that technology. And meanwhile, it's all sitting here just you know, 50 feet below the surface.
Bubbling
and,
up off
and
the
we
ground.
Couldn't find it until now. Give me a break. I don't believe that.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I think that's a fabrication out of hand, you know.
Yeah.
Saying that it's worth $4.5 billion now, it's worth 500 billion barrels. Come on.
Yeah.
Show me some new technology. All right, maybe. But come on. You just don't
but most
make
of this,
changes
yeah,
like that.
But most of the oil is going to cost a lot more money to extract, and it's not very sweet oil. It's pretty tough stuff. It's pretty sour.
Well, no, and that's why we're losing all these refineries on the East Coast, because they're all set up to refine light sweet crude oil.
Right.
And the stuff that they can get on the East Coast now is turning into heavy sour,
right.
And they can't get the light sweet because that's coming in at Cushing, and there's no pipelines to the East Coast,
right.
So we're losing like 10 or 12 refineries just this year because of this. I wrote about that a couple months ago. I think it was the Sensible Investor first quarter, maybe, or somewhere in there, talked about that. So we've got huge logistical problems, too, with this whole situation. Look, I'm not a geologist. You know, I haven't looked at, you know, the studies of what's there and what's not there. I get really suspicious when all of a sudden it becomes political season, right, and the price of oil starts dropping, right, and the price of gas starts dropping. I just get very suspicious, and maybe it's because I'm the resident cynic, yeah, up here in Pennsylvania, but that's just where I come from.
Yeah. Well,
you know, if it looks like a duck and it quacks like a duck, well, you don't call it a penguin.
Andy, I try to imagine, even if there's a blip, another blip, like we had in 2000, I shouldn't call it a blip, but some sort of financial, whatever you want to call it, similar to 2008, which if it happens again, it's going to be much worse than 2008. That they're not going to be able to pump money in like they did last time to stabilize it. That's already been tried. It's done. It's over. But then I can't imagine what the aftermath will be. What are we looking at when it does happen? Because we know it will happen. I mean, Nigel Farage, I think I just love listening to that guy. He stands there and he's face to face with these European leaders, and he says they haven't a clue of what is going on. It is that frightening. They don't have a clue.
He's probably right. I mean, there's basically two ways this can go. I mean, here's the conclusions. The dollar's going to die. The euro is going to die because they're not backed by anything. There has never been a currency in history that has been backed by nothing that has survived.
Right.
You can have all your computers and all your Keynesianism and all your little gimmicks and games and quantitative easing and fancy words, and it's not going to change that. You have something that's backed by nothing, it becomes worth nothing. That's just the way it is. It's a law of economics, it's a law of nature, whatever you want to call it, that's the way it is.
Right.
So, now, does this happen in an orderly fashion? And do we transition into a Globo or an Amero or a Worldo or some kind
right.
of, you know, regional idiotic concurrency concoction like the euro? Or does it happen in a disorderly fashion, whereas we get a 2008-style event and the whole house of cards just comes crashing in?
I can't see it being orderly.
I
can't see it being orderly because there's got to be a shock to the system. And the first thing, people panic immediately. They're not going to wait around for a week and say, well, I'll see what happens, and then I'll panic next Wednesday. They're going to panic now. Everyone's going to panic.
Well,
and I can't imagine, you know,
this is why I keep telling people, you need to be paying attention to what is going on in Europe, because these are not third world countries over there. These are first world nations. These are, you know, nations that are developed. They're, you know, they have educated people. People are people, though. Human nature is human nature. And look at what has gone on in some of these countries. You have national strikes, you have bank runs, you have rioting, you have mass chaos. And I'm probably understating it because I got a couple of contacts outside of Athens, and they all tell me that what we're seeing here on the news is nothing compared to what's really going on.
That's
people. They're not robots. They're not cyborgs in a little psychological experiment. These are actually human beings, and that's human nature taking over. There's fear, there's panic, there's a sense of unpreparedness. What do you think we have going on here? People are largely unprepared to deal with the end of the dollar.
That's interesting.
People
because
here are
we
largely unprepared to deal even with the end of the euro.
But you're right. You know, we hear about the euro, but what we hear is so antiseptic that we,
right,
it's like, oh, well, they're going to discuss it tomorrow over lunch and it'll be okay. But we don't see pictures of people in your, no, the news doesn't carry any of this. They should have people on the streets in Greece, and every day they should be talking to people and reporting back as to actually what is going on. I think if they did that, it would set off a panic.
Well, that's why they're not doing it.
Yeah.
They want everybody kind of here to just, well, this is a, you know, we've got this idiotic notion in this country that we're America. Bad things don't happen here. And when they
That's
do,
right.
it's the fault of somebody in a cave 9,000 miles away, and we need to go to war.
That's right. Absolutely. Absolutely. I bitch about that all the time. If you knew how many times I scream about that, in fact, at KFAQ, they said, they accuse me of at KFAQ is that I don't get too specific on subjects. I said, why talk about all these subjects about what government is doing? Everything they do is garbage. And I said, you want to blame the Republicans one day, the Democrats the next day, back and forth. I said, what do we learn by that? I said, I want to discuss the concepts. I said, we don't understand the concept. If we understood the concepts, then we can move forward. We're not there yet. They said, well, you got to get in more diversified in your conversation. I said, we have no diversification because we're not thinking. Right now, we're just thinking about everything and nothing. And we have this thing going around where, you know, they want a little bit more diversification. I go, in what? It's like speaking to organized crime, and let's talk about the different parts of organized crime. It's all organized crime.
Here's the thing. You know, and I don't want to speak for anybody down there, but it seems like most of these stations, at least the ones that I've listened to from time to time, they want you to take a side. You know what? Sometimes there are three sides to a coin.
Right.
There's the left side. There's the right side. I'm an American. I'm not a Democrat. I'm not a Republican. I'm an American.
That's right. That's
the
way I feel.
I love this country,
right.
God, the Constitution,
right.
All of it. None of this, all right, well, the war is good for 8 years because it has an R behind it, but then when it has a D behind it, then it's bad.
Right.
See, that's hypocrisy.
Yeah. Excuse me.
That's
Andy,
thinking.
Andy, I have to interrupt you. You know, I just realized we got 39 seconds left. Before we get shut off, okay? So I want to thank you very much for being on our program. We will be in touch. We'd like to have you on the program at KFAQ in the very, very near future. I hope you do accept my invitation.
Absolutely, Joe. I look forward to it. Always a pleasure.
All right. Thank you very much for being on our program tonight, folks. This is Joe Cristiano, Liberty Talk Radio. We'll be signing off now. Thank you very much for listening. Appreciate it. All right, and good night.
Thank you for using Blog.